If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Delighted to be joined so soon after some big breaking news for a breakdown of said news by Dan. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm calling in today from the opposite side of the Atlantic, where I've just completed my move to the US. So to any of the, I think I remember you saying that most listeners of this show are in the US. Hello to all of you. I now dwell amongst you.
At least 55 to 60% normally, depending on what demographics you look at. Yeah, so there's a huge chunk of them. So yeah, even more of you, if you love Dan, he's over your side now. If you hate him, he's much closer to you. So
yeah. I'm either at your window making you uncomfortable, yeah, or buying you a drink. Yeah. One of the two.
But like right now, anyone who's watching on video can see via the background that I'd be really impressed. Anyone who can work out where Dan is just from the shot in the background, I think Dan would be impressed with that as well.
We should send Flarky like a picture of it. I would expect him to like nail it within like 10 minutes. He'd be you're here and this is what.
Yeah. If you're on the YouTube, you may see a very slight freeze now and again on Dan's picture. Diddums. It's just enjoy more of Dan as he takes a pause in the virtual world, but audio wise you'll be absolutely fine. But yeah, Dan, listen, there was a lot of stuff, funnily, a lot of stuff happening today as we record this. So literally we've hit record and the Halputov on Joe Rogan interview has just dropped minutes ago, so that's one that's maybe for a conversation next week. Folks will maybe be able to catch that one up. Again, as we are speaking right now, there's a UAP Disclosure Fund panel that's taking place with members of Congress as well. It's being live streamed on YouTube. I've seen you've got Lou Elizondo, Avi Loeb, Eric Davis, Tim Gallaudet. It says here Chris Mellon and Kirk McConnell are both in attendance. Anna Brady-Estevez and Mike Gold are both part of the innovation panel. So interesting bunch of folks. Anna Polina Luna seems to be kind of leading things as well. I think the really interesting one there for me is Eric Davis, because we see so little of him compared to a lot of the other folks, and what we hear about someone like an Eric Davis being involved in or not having knowledge of it's one of those you always want to kind of hear more. So it's kind of good to see him stepping out. But obviously with this stuff literally going on now, we're not really across it or anything. Yeah. So you get anything to add on those?
Yeah. I mean, Elena and I were tempted to go up because we're only, I guess I'm going to be giving clues to locating me. We're only about 3 hours away from DC where we are. So
three
we are tempted.
Still, that's, you know, that's quite good. Yeah.
But in the UK, that's the whole country. In the US,
oh, God,
that's
yeah. 3 hours is a holiday.
1/30 yeah. of daily.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're about 3 hours from DC. We were tempted to go up. But we decided we're going to wait for the hearing, which is being bandied about for the 12th or the week of the 12th, I hear.
Yeah, week of the 12th.
So
yeah.
We're going to keep an ear out for that and you know, do the camping there. But yeah, it looks like a good event. Most of the people in attendance seem to be UAP aficionados or into it already. I was hoping for more of a, you know, like Stephen Greer's disclosure panel that he did back in 2001, a bit more like that, where there was some press and things like that. But I'm sure it's the first of many events. So the more of these, the merrier, you know.
It seems to be the month for it. Like you mentioned that 12th of May, there seems to be a week now because we were meant to have the skiff with Grush, Elizondo, Mellon and Arrow all in attendance a few days ago. David Grush couldn't attend, but they really want him to be there. So I'm glad to hear they didn't just go ahead with the skiff. Grush is an integral part of that. That's been put back to that week as well. So there's a lot happening this month. And I don't think anything more so than on the 29th of April, out of nowhere, 12 high noon Pacific time, Jeremy Corbell, George Knapp on their Weaponized channel mentioned shortly before they were dropping a new episode, big one. Then they mentioned it was the whistleblower for an Immaculate Constellation. Almost said Conception again. Almost.
You can just say IMCON.
I was going to say that. Yeah, IMCON, which is much cooler. So the whistleblower who wrote and authored the document was coming forward, and there he was, Matthew Brown. I spoke about this the other day, Dan, for about 20 minutes going through the interview. So I've given my thoughts on it generally. And for anyone who's not heard that or not seen the news, Matt Brown, whistleblower who wrote the document, told a story to Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp. It's going to be a three-parter. Part two will be out on Tuesday. The third part should be out the week after. It may drop slightly earlier, depending, but yeah, so those three parts are going out kind of weekly at the minute. Really interesting. It's great to see this guy finally came forward. A couple of people, I think, had hinted at it. Marek von Renningkamp, when I had him on, had mentioned that perhaps the whistleblower who wrote the document would be coming forward in the coming weeks. And here he is. So what was your take on Matt Brown, Dan?
I thought it was really interesting. One, props to Jeremy and George. We didn't get that kind of, you know, hype build-up that we normally get. It just kind of dropped out of the blue. Personally, yeah. I preferred that. I think it had a bigger impact because of that. I've seen a number of people out there. Yeah, I think so. And I've seen a number of people out there that are annoyed that it's in two or three parts. But Jeremy's said that that's so that we have time to talk about and digest the information and stuff doesn't get buried. So, you know, fair enough there. Yeah. If they've got three big parts per piece, I'm looking forward to it. This feels like when the report dropped, you and I were both talking about the hearing and kind of going, oh my God, like if this came with the author, with a bunch of bona fides and, you know, a chain of custody, this would be a whole other ball game. But as it was, it just came, the document itself. Now we get to see the person, hear the story of how he came across it. It all seems very, very legit, I guess. You know, this is one of the first whistleblowers that I felt is really nervous, really concerned. He was talking about he didn't want to do it this way, and now he's jeopardizing the future of his family and could be put in prison and stuff. So this, for me, feels like a really important kind of point. I'm not sure if when you did your talk about it, you know, there's a section where Matthew talks about where he came across the document that mentioned IMCOM, and he recounts the story. I recommend everyone go listen to it and go listen to your kind of breakdown of it. But he says that he saw Elizondo, Lou Elizondo, on the second page of the slides, and that the IMCOM was stood up after ATIP was revealed. And there's been some talking about Lou and David Grush because they both worked for Space Force at that time.
Yep.
And so it just adds more kind of legitimate stuff on top of it. And if I remember correctly, the document said at the top of it, this was the one that, you know, was leaked, or spillage is the word that they use, where Matt came across it, where he wasn't meant to. It said a 2018 Shriver War Game. David Grush's job at that time was Shriver War Game HLC advisor, which is pretty big. So whoever has Lou next, whoever speaks to Grush next, ask them about this. I want to know if that slide was accidentally put there, or if it was put there hoping someone would pick up on it.
Yeah, good shout on that. Listen, let's dive straight into to listener questions then on this, because loads of people have been in touch with various different aspects of it, and we can jump into your opinion and my opinion based on those questions as well. So,
can I ask you one thing?
Yeah.
So I was going to add this here, but I'm just going to ask you if any question addresses this, because we can address it when we get there.
Yeah.
The her who isn't named in the episode. Is there a question about that?
If there's not, we can just bring it up, and if there is, we can just do it now. Anyway, do you want to just bring that up? Yeah, I can't see a question on it directly.
Okay. So during the show, Matthew mentions that he could see who was viewing the document, who had looked at the, you know, the history and the edit history and stuff like that. And he mentioned that there was one name on there which is redacted during the episode. They refer to that person as a her, and they're very casual with how they talk about her, as if, you know, we'd be familiar.
Yeah.
And says basically that the Pentagon said that this person, this female officer, wasn't there when she's meant to have accessed it. But Matthew says, but we know that she was. Did you have any inkling as to who that was? I had an idea and I did a little checking.
I just said Susan Goff, because a lot of other folks are saying the same.
This is where I went to.
And the way they talked about it, like you say, it wasn't, because when it came up, there's that moment of, oh, name redacted. It's not as if they stopped talking about it there. You know, like you mentioned, they keep going like, oh, well, yeah, she, her, yeah, da-da-da. It's very matter of fact. And bear in mind, this was recorded before the hearing as well. So I'm guessing that was something, because this recorded before November, this was something they perhaps planned on talking about and clearly decided post-edit to go, actually, let's remove that for whatever reason. Maybe Matthew asked it, maybe Corbell and Knapp decided. I would imagine more on Matthew's side, potentially, because I imagine maybe Corbell and Knapp would be like, to hell with it, I'm putting her name out there. I doubt they would care, but they were being careful.
I guess maybe as well there's something to be said for if they're saying things about a person that turn out not to be true, they want to hedge their bets from a lawyerly perspective and just not draw any lawsuits.
Never
in
happens.
This very litigious land.
Yeah. Never happens in the UFO topic. People never say things about others that aren't true.
Never ever. So I thought Susan as well. I dived into her LinkedIn just to have a look, to see when she's been at the DOD since. She's been there since March 2009. It says that she was a senior strategic planner and spokesperson at the DOD since March 2009. But we know from following this over the years that that's not always been a job title. She was just a press person, and she's kind of climbed the ranks there. So for me, this is the best candidate for that, her. And if Susan Goff has been looking at Immaculate Constellation documents before, you know, back in 2017, 2018.
Yep.
That's a massive red flag for Susan. You know, I'm just going to hold it up. I'm going to go to the Pentagon in the next few hours and just hold up a flag outside a window.
Is that very similar to Sean Kirkpatrick having no interest in UFOs, UAP at all before he got involved with Arrow, but attending a brief with Brandon Fugel and others from Skinwalker Ranch and being photographed there?
100% similar thing, you know. And after the fact, he was like, "Oh, I didn't know what I was there for." There were like eight people in the room. Yeah. Like, it's
may,
not like this
not
is
even
500.
May not even be me. That's like, you know, like, yeah, that guy's beard looks a totally different shade of gray. It's like, yeah,
different glasses. He does
his hair
different.
A lot of shit going on, I think it's fair to say, with the whole topic in general, but especially when it gets to this political level. I think everyone lies. Everyone. The good guys, the bad guys, and everything in between lie for various reasons. I think that happens. Some of that we'll get to find out, some of it we won't, but it's such a muddy water to go through, isn't it? It's like, I don't think it's ever going to be crystal clear. So, Do we get some questions?
Yeah, let's go for it.
So Human Neutrino mentions and brings this up. Okay, so we'll talk about this aspect of it. Says, I can't really see the US military establishment prosecuting Matt Brown for this. To do so would be to admit that the information he is providing is genuine, and given the skullduggery that has gone on for the last 80-ish years, that would be exposed. He would probably be seen as a legitimate American hero. These people operate in the shadows, and to prosecute would bring an amount of light that would not be welcomed. As well as that, Dan, can we just filter in Matthew Brown saying that not only could he face life imprisonment, but also be executed? I wasn't sure if that was on treason charges, because technically that's also still a thing in the UK, isn't it? Treason. Only death penalty thing is treason. But it could also be shadowy background figures looking to suicide someone on the back of their head.
Yeah, absolutely. And he doesn't just talk about the government. You know, he talks about a group of people outside of government oversight, not necessarily of another country or of America or the military industrial complex. Like he literally refers to, George Knapp brings up, oh, so there are a bunch of like money people who are investigating this. And Matt says, yeah, that's a part of it, but it's much bigger than that. So yeah, the Liberation Times article picked up on that and referred to it as, in quotes, air quotes, a breakaway civilization. Mm. So how, you know, if you imagine back in the 50s, a group of people find this technology and they have it all to themselves. And for decades and decades and decades, they're just working on it, not getting too far ahead, but, you know, bit by bit. And suddenly, you know, here we are in 2025. They've got the iPhone 50. We're just on, you know, the iPhone 16. Yeah. Then they're ahead of us, you know, and how far removed from the general kind of social contract can a group be before we just say, are they what we would be referring to if we say the word human, you know, or humankind? Are they with us or are they a separate group? But it gets muddy.
Right. Are you saying, oh God, this is a sidebar already. Are you saying, though, that would be like a group of army guys and scientists discover the secret to this tech, unlock something from the Roswell craft or whatever it may have been, and they go off on their own route and develop this technology, but it's developed so quick and so exponentially fast that, for example, they could be the ones behind the Tic Tac?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's like that, yeah. So they, as a small group, are so technologically advanced, but to what end?
That's the question.
What are they going to do? Like 12 of them going to invade? Like,
well, that's, I mean, this is where all the ideas for, you know, the Nazis on the moon movies and stuff like that come from, right? Because they have their technology and that's what they go do. But there was also a really great graphic novel series that I read probably about a decade ago now, called The Manhattan Project. And it was about like Einstein and von Braun and people like that brought together to work on an alien technology. And they, you know, you had different nationalities that were fed up of their governments, telling them what to do, what they can't do. And they have this tech at their disposal, which is stuff like portal tech, so they can just jump to another planet and see what's there if they want to. So in a very short time in this story, they go from working under the government to having a massive upper hand over every government on Earth and see themselves as just their own group. And they're like, you can't touch us. You know, we're off on other planets, flying through space, doing all these things, and we're exploring. And you guys are just there, stuck in red tape. Have fun, you know?
Such a wild sidebar on the UFO topic, because that's the kind of stuff that you can go off in a massive tangent and just keep bringing other bits back into it, that this could be relevant or this could be. And on that, though, the actual question itself, Dan.
Getting back.
Do you see that, off the back of this, any repercussions would be an admission of, because could it not be, I'm trying to be devil's advocate again here, could it not be that he's come out and spoken about national secrets and accessing documents that he shouldn't be talking about, but he said himself that the document wasn't labeled as classified, and he's not talking about anything that Sarah Gamm, Lenville Logan and others haven't talked about either. So I don't see that he's done a whole lot wrong in that sense, other than if what he's saying is true and genuine, which I've got no reason to disbelieve, he would have pissed a lot of the wrong people off.
Yeah, I think at the very least, it's going to be he's pissed a lot of people off. At the most, it's going to be, hey, you signed an oath to serve this country, to do things through the proper channels, to keep our secrets, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they'll try and prosecute that way. I don't think necessarily the prosecution means that everything he said is true. It could just be one line of something that he said is true, and that would be enough to prosecute. And also, they could just prosecute him and say, it wasn't what he thought it was, but it was still something he's not meant to talk about. Mm. And that would be the official line that 90% of people on the planet would accept. And then the UFO community obviously would all be waving our red flags going, bullshit, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, and I really hope it doesn't come to this. And I'm always very wary of discussing real, genuine, someone having their life ended for this kind of stuff, you know, because this is genuine real life stuff. I mentioned the other day a few times about the Prince Andrew, Virginia, is it Juff, whatever her name was, you know?
The young girl.
She was found dead. Mm-hmm. And there are theories that she didn't actually end her own life, and I'm going to say that for the algorithm, folks, because it picks up on certain words.
Unalived is what the kids say now, right?
I hate that as well. There are theories she, you know, was potentially unalived by other people. Other folks would say, no, look, the girl had issues, troubles based on what had happened, and, you know, whatever happened. But there's a lot of folks who just go, nope, she was unalived by the establishment, by the folks involved in all this Epstein stuff that didn't want her speaking any further. And it just happens in front of the public and people go, yep. How many folks, like, was there not a whistleblower killed was it Boeing or one of those big aircraft companies?
Oh yeah, Boeing had a few whistleblowers.
And a few really key witnesses who were going to talk out against them suddenly turned up not alive. And again, the general public seem to either go, oh, well, these things happen, or no, they are being, you know, killed. But what are you going to do? What can you do about it? It just, these people are powerful and do this stuff. So I would hope that's not the case, and that coming forward, he's got at least a level of protection that perhaps he wouldn't have staying in the background. Yeah.
Yeah, same. Absolutely the same. And I got to say as well, props to Jeremy. I remember watching that documentary, the TMZ one. Is that on Tubi?
Yeah.
Tubi, yeah. Yeah, and after that documentary finished, I thought, well, you know, he got real angry about the whole Immaculate Constellation thing being taken away from him. I felt it was like a credit issue, and that, you know, he didn't look so great in the last section where he was like storming around with a red face and, you know, having a bit of a tantrum. But I remember seeing that and kind of going, okay, well, if you really feel that way, and now's the time to pull this band-aid off and just drop everything you got.
I think
and
you
start,
said that.
You know, get this author forward, and, you know, let's go. You know, if you're angry and you can see that it's not working the proper way, let's do this the hard way. And pretty much, you know, when Jeremy released this, he said, yeah, it's time to do this the hard way. Let's get moving. So I'm hoping this is the start of a very active phase for Jeremy and George.
Nick says, what do you make of Matthew Brown saying he was told he couldn't discuss Grush, but not Elizondo? So he basically said that, you know, Grush was a bad word, wasn't he? That, you know, if you brought him up...
Radioactive
is the language, yeah. But he wasn't told that about Elizondo. So anything to that? What do you make of that?
I mean, it's hard to guess, but if I had to, you know, gun to my head, I would say Elizondo kind of came out and did the damage already. Grush came after the fact. The documents themselves kind of say, you know, ImCom was made after ATIP was exposed by Lou Elizondo to the point where his picture was there. You know, I'm really curious whether that's a Lou helped found ImCom or whether his picture's there like a mugshot, like, remember this guy, you know? But at the very least, after that point, shit got locked down. You know, the classification guide was released. Everything UAP was classified. And so David Grush came forward and spoke about these things under much tighter reins. And so I think Grush would be seen as, you know, Elizondo broke the old rules, Grush broke the new rules, I would say. And it's almost like they kind of went, yeah, Lou did that, don't worry about it. We're kind of, you know, only a small subset of the population believe him, a growing subset, but, you know, a small subset, whereas Grush had much more of an impact. And I just feel like they don't want him kind of being held up as a role model for people inside the intelligence community who might have something to say.
Yeah, and potentially annoyed that Lou had already gone and done that. So you could imagine in the background there were conversations, you know, Elizondo's this and Elizondo's done that, and, you know, we're going to, like you say, lock stuff down, we're going to deal with it this way. And Grush was potentially privy to a lot of those conversations and direction. So they're trying to patch things up. They're trying to fix things in the background. They're trying to move on in a direction that's damage limitation. How do we get this back under our control as much as we can? And then in the midst of that, Grush breaks rank and comes forward. And it's like, oh, Christ. So again, all these cracks have, you know, papered over. I got plasters on. There's more leaks coming through because now Grush has come out.
Yeah.
And is it becoming harder for them to stop that momentum? And it sounds like, from what Luna's just said in that briefing before, there are other whistleblowers coming forward who want to come forward with these hearings and talk about potential involvement in crash retrieval programs. You've had then Jake Barber with Skywatcher. There's some questions on that we'll get to, who's come forward. You've had others, Jason Sands, Lenvo Logan, Sarah Gam, David you know, we now have a list of names. Michael Herrera is one that story is wild, but more and more folks I can see are even some of the more skeptical folks, Dan, are starting to say, I didn't buy that story, but now I've heard X, Y, and Z, that makes more sense. And it's
and I would count myself amongst those people as well. Yeah. Skeptical initially, but now just like my eyebrows raised.
Yeah.
Like I can see how the story was, Michael's story was pushed in a way that made it sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then when you hear Michael talk about it and the behind the scenes of it, and, you know, Joey's Not My Name kind of speaks on the Discord a bit and has spoken out publicly about it, there seems to be something to it. You know, something is happening to him. He's getting inside contacts or something.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And even like small things for me, like Jason Sands, had him on a few weeks ago, and when I spoke to Jason, his story, so many people focused on, one, the way he came out online, not the best way to do it, he says that himself, but two, the whole blue alien thing. But then when you speak to him and he clears it up, because a lot of the people who post or mock what Jason said focus on blue-skinned alien, Smurf-like avatar type, and he's like, no, it wasn't like that. It was more of a, like, if your skin's really cold, it goes that sort of bluish colour. It wasn't like a blue, like the Smurfs or the Power Ranger suit, you know, it's like... Sure. But it's really easy to be like, oh, he said blue alien, so here's what he saw. And he's like, no, that's not. So again, all this kind of stuff can very quickly get turned around. And yeah, listen, Daniel sent a question in. Daniel.
Not me.
No, could be. does any of this really make a difference? We've had so much happen over the last 5 to 8 years, yet we still have to be selective who we talk to about all of this. Some people just think you're nuts as soon as the word UFO comes out your mouth. The more I follow this subject, the more I feel I'm living in two realities, the UFO one and the mainstream one. Do you think these will ever become one and the same? And I'll just start off, Dan, by saying to what you said before about there was a small section of people who believe Lou Elizondo's story when he first came out and came forward the way he did. You said, though, it's a growing number of people. And I think that's fair. Not just Lou Elizondo's story, but the people involved around him, people who are coming in a parallel or adjacent to Lou Elizondo and have other stories, are getting people's attention. And it is gaining more and more traction to the point we're now getting this UFO UAP hearing right now, not hearing, but, you know, the panel that's happening. We've then got the hearing due in a couple of weeks. We've got the SCIF due in a couple of weeks. There does seem to be finally some more momentum happening where we're not just building up to one event. We are building up to weeks and weeks and weeks of activity happening at different levels. And we still, if you want to even talk on this, don't have a release date for the Age of Disclosure documentary, which has got a lot of people questioning in the background whether that may be deliberate or not, or literally it's just distribution rights. I don't know.
Sorry, I was almost on mute then. Old school. Yes, I agree. I think it does make a difference. These things don't seem to make the big waves on their own, but together they seem to make a big difference. I picture it like a snowball going down a hill. It picks up momentum the bigger it is, and Matthew's testimony and the report he's provided makes that snowball all the more bigger. I think he's spot on talking about two realities. And he made me think of Matthew in one portion of the interview talks about onion skins to our realities. And he says, I'm just going to read this. It's a little, I say a bit of a quote here, but I'll read this just to exemplify. Matthew says, it's parallel reality. The secrecy apparatus is all pervasive. It is not just in the intelligence community governing their world. It's not just the military protecting their operations. It's not protecting diplomats and leaders as they conduct their work, sometimes in very dangerous places. It's being allowed to corrupt and infest every aspect of our society to serve the interests and whims of a very elite select few. I think our military has a long historic involvement in this. So does our intelligence community and our scientific academic community. We have, as a country, allowed ourselves to be penetrated, co-opted, and corrupted by an internationalist force that serves their interests and views nations, people, and tools as a means to an end. And that's where George brings up, you know, the billionaires and stuff, kind of with groups investigating this. And then Matthew says, that is a large part of it. I think we have to go above that too, to start to explain the level of deception and the level of commitment they've had to maintaining that deception. It's above just monetary gain and power. They're afraid. And I think that speaks to the two realities point that Dan just made in his question, where when disclosure happens, it's not just a case of, oh, we're not alone. It's a case of all these kind of levels of the onion skin and the realities collapsing in on themselves. And right now, you know, there's a select few who will know, for example, what led to us catching, or the US capturing Osama bin Laden, for example. But if all those details were known throughout the whole public sphere, we might be having a slightly different conversation about it. Now, exponentially multiply that to think of the UAP subject and how long it's been going, how much it's been buried, some of the things these people, these internationalists could have done in the name of research or keeping it from us. And I think that's why we're seeing these two realities kept separate, because this is a crazy reality for a lot of people. And as much as people say, oh yeah, we can handle disclosure, I think some people can, some people won't, as we saw with COVID, you know, it's not an easy transition. And so, yeah, those two realities are separate now. I think they'll merge eventually, but for them to merge, a lot has to happen in terms of government transparency and working together around the world. And, you know, just all things like that, that are really high stakes kind of political positions and moves. So I think we're a ways off those two realities coming together, but I think there's a reason for them being separate right now, and there will be a reason for them coming together in the future.
Could be huge consequences off the back of those coming together, depending how much they come together. Yep. And, you know, even to go down the potentially ridiculous sounding end of the scale, what if a full disclosure like that prompts some kind of alien invasion of whatever these things are, where they do come down and go, okay, you've been told we're here, that's fine, we're not going to hide anymore, but that might not be a good thing for us.
Yeah, exactly. The book that we talked about in the last breakdown, Time Rider, was it? The one that To the Stars is bringing out. Mm-hmm. And the idea of that book is that there's something in the future that is trying to get us to become them. And so they're coming back and, you know, hitting down these goals to make sure we're on that path. What if disclosure is one of those goals, and the people that are keeping this under wraps are doing everything they can to not go down that path, and here's us just, you know, screaming to go down that path, and we don't even know what we're asking for?
The bad guys in a way end up being like the good guys. That's the twist at the end, but it's like, no, there was a reason for this, and we all go, oh yeah, sorry. Yeah,
like what happens at the end of, you know, an action movie if the bad guys realize that the good guys were inside them all along, and vice versa, and they're all one and the same. Just muddy and messy.
Yeah, very muddy boots. Shane says, not really a question, but after hearing Matthew Brown state that UAP will always take interest in nukes and nuclear assets, and that he's not sure UAP are alien or our tech, we do have to wonder, if it's the USA's tech, why would we be interested in observing our own nuclear programs? There would be no reason I can think of that we would have to covertly observe our own program using our more secretive craft. So that leads me to two outcomes. Either other foreign powers do have this tech and are using it to observe other countries' nuclear programs, or it's a third party, which in this case would be the alien non-human option. But could that then also point to what we talked about before with the separate, private, non-state entity That could be multinational. It could be there's people from China, Germany, US, you know, Scotland
likely
involved in it. Yeah.
Likely. And some of the names being thrown around for those kind of things, I've heard the Knights of Malta being passed around. That's worth looking into if you're interested in this side of it. Look at their history, where they came from, the fact that they are extra-governmental. You know, they're not a nation state. They seem to be like a free-floating group. Then you have, you know, the banks in the 50s, 60s, they all set up people. I imagine you've done a SWIFT payment through a bank, right? Ever? It's like an international transfer. You'll have to get like a SWIFT number and an IBAN number.
I think I did years ago for when I went to Ibiza for a few weeks and had to pay for an apartment deposit. But yeah,
okay.
That was a long time ago.
Exactly.
Needless information. Sorry, folks. That was like totally needless. But
a little cipher. Let's know the whole thing. This is a breakdown of Andy in Ibiza now.
That was Andy before he had a wife, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, back in the day, we were all young ones.
But basically the banks in the 50s and 60s, they didn't have a way of moving large sums of monies around, so they set up protocols to do it, and SWIFT was one of those protocols. And so if you're essentially a massive secret group moving money around between countries and people in those countries, SWIFT would be the way to do it. So I've heard that passed around as kind of a potential for who this big group is. Personally, I like to call them the no-see-ums. You know those flies in the summer that kind of, they're really tiny, and there are just patches of them that you'll walk through when you're walking down a path, and you're just like, ah, get out. Everywhere. But you never kind of see one on its own, right? Like just flying around. So I call this imaginary or maybe real group of, you know, internationalists the no-see-ums, because they're hard to pick out unless they're all gathered in one room, I guess. I think the US tech angle, I think using nuclear weapons to test technology is not a bad idea. Maybe there's something inherent in the technology that means sniffing out nukes is a lot easier with it, and so they do that to kind of test it. But also the nuclear weapons have really good security protocols around them. Mm. So if you really want to test how far you can push something, go sniff a country's nukes. You know, that's going to get you a reaction. That's going to tell you whether you're really good at breaking through their security. But again, it doesn't make a lot of sense that the US would do that. They have training ranges to do this kind of stuff, even to the point where, you know, Lou said that they were setting up like essentially a nuclear baiting operation in the Atlantic that was shut down before it could get going. But, you know, they were able to get that material and take it out and stuff like that. So the link is real, clearly. But who's showing up to take a look-see at this stuff? I don't know. One of the things around nukes I found intriguing was that, I can't remember who said it, whether it was Lou or someone else, but basically, even when the military's fake moving nuclear material, they get the attention of UAP. Mm. So it's the activity that seems to attract attention. And I always try and think of it like, you know, if you're watching an ant farm, you know, in one of those clear-sided plastic things where you can watch them build and stuff, a lot of activity is going to get you to watch, right? But I wonder, essentially, who we are to whoever's watching us. Like, that's the biggest question for me. If I could talk to them, I'd be like, what's our relationship?
You don't even have to look too far back, though, to look at the drone situation that's happened. Yep. And some folk are saying they're still happening, but it's came out in the media. You know, we don't know what was flying over the skies, the genuine, you know, mysterious looking stuff, not all the videos people posted online of actual aircraft and said they were NHI. There were some, and I still get people messaging me about this, they're like, I can't believe you didn't think. I'm like, no, there was some weird stuff going on, but we don't know what it was. I didn't see any videos of NHI. There was a lot of nonsense put online, but something was being flown over the skies of the East Coast of the US, and the US government, the FAA, all seem to have mixed messages about this. People in the military on that 60 Minutes special were coming out with mixed messages as to what it may or may not have been, what it definitely wasn't, and it wasn't approved, it was approved. Is that a non-state actor doing stuff? Is that an aspect of the military doing stuff where they're like, we need to test something, but we can't let other folks know? And in the background, one or two high up officials go, you know what, just do it, we'll sort it. You know, ask forgiveness, what permission, we don't know. So there's a kind of smaller scale version of it that made international news. And then, like you said earlier, ramp that up exponentially to the UFO subject, UAP, non-human intelligence, a private non-state breakaway civilization, which is terrifying to think of, and that kind of stuff is hard for the general public to wrap their heads around, then who knows? It could be combinations of all that stuff that Shane mentions as well, but we literally don't know. But we're getting to a place where the conversation really is threatening to break out in a bigger way, which will only help. The drone stuff did, which was actually helpful. It just wasn't pursued enough.
That was
a big story, and it just went away. And that was over two administrations. That was Biden and Trump.
Yeah.
It just went away. So, yeah.
And I guess because they just had a hearing on the drone stuff, and they had one back when it was happening as well. And the takeaway from both of them seemed to be, we can't explain what it was, but we're going to be sure to do better next time, which is, I don't know, is that reassuring to people? It doesn't sound like they have control of it, does it?
Larry David, executive producer. So, Purple Burglar, we kind of touched on this, Dan, but Purple Burglar asked, you know, the line where Matthew states that we've been used by the global cabal as a means to an end. What do you think this is? What do you think is the end game for the elite?
Yeah, really good question. I guess things
control?
Usually come down to control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Control is usually the way things go, whether you look at religion or government or everything.
Just to add, Matthew says it's beyond power, it's beyond money. You know, mm-hmm. This is now almost, he said it's a fear they have because there's been an exposure of more than I'm guessing they expected or wanted with all the last few years. And people being a bit more alert and able to piece this stuff together, there's that. If you're fearful of your situation, you lack or you crave control.
Yeah, absolutely. And that control can be in several ways. Like, it could be exactly what you said, but it could also be, you know, the stranger, more out there stuff. Like we were just talking about, like, if we know they're from the future and they're trying to get us go a certain way, we're trying to control our own destiny and not just go down the path that's being laid out for us. Control of own destiny and control to choose how we want the world to look tomorrow instead of being told by whoever this interloper is.
Interloper, going back to the old Tom DeLonge guitar.
Yeah, I thought I'd pull it in. Yeah, yeah.
Signage there. Yeah, see, years to come, people will go back and find all these threads and go, yeah, it was there. Cynthia says the naysayers are pointing out that because the Immaculate, or she says IMCON, she's cool, info Mr. Brown uncovered was labeled 2018 Shriver War Game, the info is therefore not real. My husband, who already knows, says if it was part of a war game, it is definitely not real. This is concerning as it's a bit obvious, and maybe I missed something and need to go and read the document again. My question is, did I miss something? Could it really be a war game and nothing else? Kind of a funny war game to play, but there you are. Dan, you alluded to the idea that the document maybe was left there for a reason. Other folks online I've seen have speculated this as well, that, again, there's so many ways to go to Cynthia's question here. It could be that it was put there and is just that simulated war game scenario, but using some NHI, UAP, UFO tech, that still begs the question, why are you putting that kind of stuff in a war game scenario as opposed to the old, if we nuke China, then China will nuke us and they have this many and we would run out by this time. And the old Annie Jacobson book that's out, you know, on nuclear war and whatnot. But then you mentioned, Dan, quite rightly, other folks have said the same. Could this be a document that's been left there for people to find? And then is this misinformation that's being leaked deliberately in the same way? And I said this back at the time, you did, Dan, others as well. Even when someone as credible as a David Grush comes out and says what he says, there are elements that you don't know. Has some of this information been deliberately fed to him as bullshit? I remember when I spoke to Graham Rendell some time ago about that all, Dan, and he mentioned Grush bringing up the Magenta Italy crash and saying that that's widely considered to be disinformation and nonsense and debunked, but there was Grush sitting talking about it. So you can look at it and go, ah, Grush knows it's real, or actually Grush just saw a document that was deliberately falsified, whatnot. We don't know, but yeah, I'll let you take over from there.
This, I mean, that's what I loved about Matthew. Like, he didn't say These are definitely alien. He just said the performance is, you know, off the charts. Like, I don't know what these are. It's either someone that we're familiar with or another group. And so he's interpreting, right? And he's being honest about that. And I appreciated that.
But as aliens, though.
It is aliens, yeah. Like, with a Z, because that makes it cooler.
Just checking.
obviously. Yeah. War game stuff, interesting angle, but I guess, you know, it's gaming out. I think if the US came forward and kind of just said, like, hey, look, you know, if you imagine, I don't know, Tulsi Gabbard or someone coming forward and just saying, hey, look, you know, the James Webb telescope is up there. We're all talking about life out there. We're talking about UFOs. So we need to be ready for all the different scenarios. Like, what if peaceful aliens come down? What if violent aliens come down? We need to be ready for that eventual happening. And so we're going to war game it out. That would be fine if they just said something like that, but they're not, which it makes it feel like there's more to this than what they're saying. If they were just straight up about that kind of stuff, fine. But yeah, they're holding their tongues, which makes me kind of go, is there something that you're trying to kind of play out here? And yeah, I alluded that it could have been leaked purposely. It could obviously be a genuine mistake. But then it brings me to this place where I think it was Tom DeLonge that said it. He was like, you've got to remember that when you come across any conspiracy theory, usually they're pushed into the public sphere to distract you. You know, the conspiracy theory will say, did we land on the moon or did we not? When there's a third option that no one's talking about, that just by posing the question, you're keeping that third option off the table. So did we land on the moon is actually irrelevant. It's the real question would be, what did we find there? You know, who was waiting for us? Something like that. We're not talking about that if we're talking about the other thing. So Immaculate Constellation, as amazing as it sounds, and as much as I want to kind of get into all that data and watch those videos and things like that, it was formed, according to this slide, after ATIP, after Lou, you know, exposed ATIP. So we're looking 2017, 2018. For me, this looks like almost a distraction from the legacy program. And I think we should all be a bit more wary of it for that reason. You know, look into it. But this is a modern effort as opposed to this long-running thing.
Something unless, from the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, unless unbeknownst to us, ATIP was a part of that legacy program and was just the name of one portion of it or something like that. But it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be that they were trying to use OSAP and ATIP to get into the legacy programs as a, you know, SAP, a special access program. And then, yeah, that got busted. So they changed the name and ImCon kind of comes along with its fancy AI and pulling the data into one kind of stovepipe. So, yeah, it's not the legacy program that we're all excited about.
I'm going to ask you here, how much of this at all relates to Skywatcher and what they are doing and the timing of what they are doing?
I guess it would relate in the sense that, like, let's just game this out. So if I'm Jake Barber, I'm on the range and I'm there with my psionic assets and I'm summoning things in the sky. Mm-hmm. According to this Immaculate Constellation document, the things that I'm summoning would be photographed in infrared, in, you know, all these different kind of frequency ranges. The pictures would be captured in high definition from satellites of what I was doing, and they would be stored on a government server somewhere. There would never be any interaction between, I guess, ImCon and Skywatcher.
Yep.
But they would be keeping tabs on what they're doing. And it makes me think of, remember when Travis Taylor was revealed that he was on the UAP task force? Mm-hmm. And in Skinwalker, there was a little bit of drama in the show about it because Dragon was like, oh, I felt like, you know, you were wolf in sheep's clothing this whole time kind of hanging out with us. But Travis said, well, being a part of that enables me to see what's going on the inside and what's going on the ground here. So if there's a black helicopter flying over, I can tell you that's not us. So I think Jake and his team's bona fides are such that I think they would know what they were looking at if, you know, they were being surveilled by, like, you know, black sedans or what we would call men in black or anything like that. So it could be informative to them to see that they were being surveilled, but I would expect everything that they've recorded to be in the government servers somewhere. So there should definitely be an overlap. And based on what we know of Arrow, Arrow should have access to what Skywatcher are doing without going out to see what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of deception going on.
What about even just the timing, though, around the fact? I know this interview was recorded before the hearing. I'm guessing the idea was that Corbell was taking Matthew Brown into Congress. We know that from the documentaries before the hearing. Yep. Matthew Brown would have been in that seat, ideally, instead of Michael Schellenberger. That whole scenario still, I think, is an unanswered question as to how Schellenberger ended up in that seat. Because even more so now, it seems like Corbell should have been the one in that seat if it wasn't Matthew Brown. Which
I would agree.
That especially with this coming out now, makes no sense. So with Matthew Brown being there, then Jake Barber and co, I'm guessing, given the nature of what they do, are they aware of Matthew Brown in the background? Do they know who that is? Do they know his name? Have they met before? Even if they're not, you know, formally acquainted, you know, they'd be aware of that kind of stuff happening in the background. And then does Jake Barber make the play, let's go public with what we're trying to do, because he knows a Matthew Brown's in the wings? Other folks, Jeremy Corbell allegedly has said, I missed this if he has said it publicly, but there are other whistleblowers recorded like Matthew Brown, ready to go. And we're now hearing from Luna saying there are whistleblowers potentially coming forward at the hearing to discuss legacy crash retrieval programs. It sounds like timing-wise, it could be coincidental, but a nice one, or there's a little bit of a plan or causality, at least.
Yeah, I hear you. The only thing that would give me doubt on that would be just that the skiff was meant to be the day that this was released. So there would have been like a little crossover in terms of fighting for the same eyeballs, I think. But it's not a big deal, right? Like, both things would have just... We probably wouldn't have heard anything from what happened in the skiff for a few days until someone like Laszlo caught up with the senators.
Yeah, so I suppose we don't know then, but did Corbell and Knapp find out Grush wasn't going to be in the skiff and it wasn't going ahead, so they dropped that release?
Maybe. I guess that's a question for Jeremy and Knapp. You know, Jeremy did say that he's been working, trying to get Matthew, help him with the courage to kind of come forward and talk. But he didn't give like a time frame. He didn't say like, oh yeah, from last month, Matthew's been fine with us dropping this or anything like that. We've just been working on it. But Brown, I would be concerned if Brown wasn't testifying at the next hearing that's coming up.
Okay. But fair. Yeah. Charlie says, question on the dog whistle. If this equipment has been, and the dog whistle, folks, for those unsure, is the piece of equipment that Skywatcher are using to summon these craft, not psionically, this is their mechanical version of it. Charlie asks, if this equipment has been refined to work 100% of the time, how long until UAP dog whistles become the next air fryer? I know that location is incredibly important. But in this hypothetical situation, surely it wouldn't be long until everyone owns one. I know I'll be asking for one for Christmas. Interested to hear your thoughts on my incoherent question. I'm not reading that last line, but yeah, incoherent question.
I want to know now. You'll have to show me when we stop recording.
It says love you lots.
Oh, I love you too.
Yeah, but yeah, thank you, Charlie.
That's a nice one.
I always cut out the nice stuff at the end, people say, so I missed that one.
You should leave it in.
Or
just put some things in if they don't include one.
It just wastes time like this. Now we're like a minute.
Oh, yeah,
and sure. Your time is valuable, Dan.
I'm going to send you a question and just be like, thanks for the back rubs, Andy, at the end.
Yeah, see if it makes it through. But yeah, see that 100% of the time, I do wonder, is there a little bit of Anchorman Sex Panther there where 60% of the time it works 100% of the time?
Yeah. I think so. And they, like we said last time when we talked about Skywatcher stuff, they kind of walked back a little bit of those early sensational statements, like it works 100% of the time. Certain people are saying that the spokesperson for them, Matthew Pines, isn't. He's saying that it's reliable, not necessarily that it works every time.
Do you know what it reminds me of? Sorry to interrupt, but you know when you buy bleach or antibac and it says kills 99.9% of germs?
Sure.
That's like a legal thing they have to say. It does actually kill 100% of germs, but they can't guarantee or promise that, but it almost definitely will. So that's why they put 99.9%, So
yeah,
You know, is it just something like that where, you know what, technically we could claim 100%, but maybe just from a PR point of view, it looks better to not say 100%.
Yeah, it would protect their asses for sure. Mm. To the questioner's point though, like I want a dog whistle. I would like one of these things. Or all it's doing is, you know, they've spoken about it in other places. All it's doing is emitting a frequency of sound. So it's just a case of knowing what frequency kind of lures in what type of UAP. and
would you use it?
I would, yeah. I'd give it a good go. I'd sit there with like a camera and try and capture something. I think open sourcing it a bit, yeah. I would say. Because, yeah, I've definitely spoken about this before, like doing CE5 and kind of getting flashes of light in the sky, yeah, and not knowing what it is, that you get this feeling of like, I don't actually know what I'm messing with here.
Yeah.
If whatever it was appeared and decided to try and eat me, there's not a damn thing I could do about it.
Mm. Yeah, like it's someone asked the other day a question about, you know, I think it was to Whitley Strieber, and if folks are listening to this, the Whitley Strieber interview will be available. So sign up on the free trials, we'll hear it early, but it comes out next week. But, you know, it's almost like a Ouija board, which I know you're familiar with from your escapades with Elena and when you were in the UK, that you don't know what you're dealing with. You can assume and you can have a rough idea, or you can, you know, guesstimate, but we don't know exactly what we're dealing with. So even when they turn these things on, that's what makes me think, and I suppose think slash hope, they probably do know what they're dealing with, and they're confident they know exactly what they're dealing with, but they're now walking it back and making it out as if they don't. I think they do know exactly what they're calling.
Hopefully they do. For all of our safety, not just theirs. You know, I can just imagine a random passerby driving on a road near to the range, and one of the diamond things decides to cut the car engine off or something and approach it. You know, there's got to be a plan of action for something like that. I'm not just being silly when I say that. Like, there needs to be someone like Dragon on Skinwalker Ranch that will know exactly what to do in those situations to make sure that person is safe. And yeah, I'd love to hear them talk about that, but they haven't yet.
Even like what happens when you do call one of these, so, you know, say these things are literally manufactured in some way, shape or form. Every time you call one is another made. So you're actually creating more of them by summoning one. And it's like, you know, some kind of like von Neumann type thing where these things are like self-replicating. So that action, you're not just summoning this craft to appear or whatever it is to appear and disappear. Something else happens off the back of that that you don't know. And I mean, that's pure speculating, but
yeah, I love the speculation though.
Yeah.
This, I guess, would be the for the episode we said, you know, we'll just get really high and just ridiculous, do a Patreon show. But it's a good point. Like, you know, what if there's a number? What if these things are innocuous? Like, they're benevolent until they get to a million of them in number and then they attack.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't know.
Yeah. You're literally on a countdown to a couple more of these, and then that's it. And then you find out exactly what they do.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're all going, one more. Yeah. This is fun. I'm doing picks for Twitter. One more. Yeah.
That, I mean, again, that's pure speculation. But goes back to when we've discussed the idea that as Jake Barber and Skywatcher set up to send messages to folks in the background, imagine that was the case, though, and they're literally going, you know, we can summon these things, but you know what happens if we summon too many, or you know what happens when we do summon these, that there's another action off the back of it. And like you mentioned, that whole distraction piece, the summoning of that interesting thing isn't the interesting thing that happens, but that's not really public yet. Maybe there's something else off the back of that where it's like, you know, you're literally poking the hornet's nest each time you do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember at the end of Cabin in the Woods?
Yes.
Yeah, where the big god thing comes. So, spoilers, folks. Great movie.
It's been long enough now. Yeah, awesome.
It's been a long time. But, you know, the idea that they don't do something enough times and then this big god thing comes up and destroys the fucking world. It's that whole thing of, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said earlier, it sounds silly, but we don't know what we're dealing with. So all of this is on the table.
Exactly. Bent Spoon says, as far as more whistleblowers are concerned, I think that on the surface it will appear they won't make a difference with the general public unless an amazing video or photo is made public. However, behind the scenes, they will have a huge effect on future policy with regards to these topics. Yeah, that's more of a statement we can agree or disagree on. But yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would give 10 points for that. You know, that's half court. Throwing the ball in all net.
Not sure though on the video or photo stuff anymore, because I think you're just going to get folks. You see the reaction when anything comes out and it's not good quality enough. Oh, it's too good quality. That's fake. You know, that could be anything. And it even makes me wonder about the picture of the black triangle above the Russian naval fleet, where if that comes out, would we look at it and go, I mean, yeah, it's a triangle, but it's really high up.
Yeah, I'm sure we would. Like that's what that chain of custody is important for.
Yeah.
So that we can kind of go, yeah, we know what sensor it was from. We have someone that was on the ship that took it from the sensor system and has provided this video. And that's the chain of custody. It's not just, you know, oh, look, it's on the internet. And then you find out that it's someone's model TIE fighter or whatever people do these days.
Last couple of questions, Dan, because I know you're very short on time. A few of them have touched on, so Terence, we've touched on that question. Thank you. The Hive touched on that question as well. Michael asks, he says he's taking a big risk. For what? I don't feel like a bombshell was dropped. Maybe part two will be more revealing.
It all comes down to whether if Immaculate Consolation is classified, even though that page wasn't classified, this is potentially a big risk for him. And Matthew has to consider those risks when he does these actions. He's not saying he's definitely going to be executed or he's definitely going to be thrown in jail, but it would be silly of him to speak out and not consider those actions that will affect his life and his family and everything like that.
Yeah. I think it's also a hard one. You're right. I think it's a really hard one for people to put themselves in the shoes of people like this. And it's easy to sit and go, oh yeah, well, he's just went on YouTube and talked about UFOs. But when he's had the job he has had and he's worked in that organization that he has, if he's legitimate and if he is genuinely coming forward to say this stuff, this is really serious. And like, I'm not sure on the exactly what they were alluding to regarding the family stuff, but it sounds to me it was more like, I wanted to have a family and a certain lifestyle that, because I've done this now, that's not really on the cards anymore. But I've decided to give that up because I feel so strongly about people knowing that, ultimately going back to what he says at the start of the interview, are we alone in the universe? The answer is no. Jake Barber said the same thing. David Grush said the same thing. Lou Elizondo said the same thing. Countless others before them and after have said the same thing. And if that, you've got to commend that. If you're interested and you're listening to this right now, you almost definitely have an interest in the UFO topic. There's someone coming out and saying, you know what, I feel so passionately and strongly about this. Given what I've seen, given my background, there's something to this. And no, we are not alone. And this is my way. I can do something about this from that kind of secret, that place of secrets. But can he do any more? And for people to go, it's not a big deal. You go, really? You know, you don't have to believe them and not everything else. But I think you just have to look and go, if this is genuine, then it's a big deal. I say that as the storm we're about to have starts outside. So apologies if people can hear the rain or the wind or that's kind of starting. But yeah, what's your thoughts on that, Dan?
There was an intriguing part of it where Matthew was talking about, he said that he was doing this because we are not headed to a good future.
Yeah.
It was something like that. And he was talking about humanity. And then he said that his biggest fear is what humanity will do out of greed. And that by kind of having this information in the public domain where we can look at it ourselves, we can make a future that's a damn sight better than what they have planned for us. He doesn't say who they is or anything like that. But it certainly sounds like, you know, a very noble approach to it, right? Like he's not saying, I want a flying car. He's saying, you know, we're messing up the planet and this could really save our asses. He talks about the exact quote where he talked about his family. I just pulled that up when you were talking. He said, I am on a personal level giving up the future that I made for myself and was going to try to make for my family. I'm proud of what I accomplished in my time in government, and it's painful to leave the good people there and to know that there really isn't room for people to act according to their conscience or our constitutional ideals. This guy sounds very heroic. I'll say that. You know, he's saying all the right things. He's looking out for everyone, not just the US, not just for the US government. He's talking about humanity and kind of having control over our own destiny. It was just another part of this that made me think or lean towards this guy being the real deal, you know, like being very honest about what he saw, writing down what he saw. And when you kind of pair that with the report itself, what was the line that it finished with? Be not afraid.
Oh God, something like that.
Yeah, it was like in Latin or something like that, wasn't it? The truth will come into the light, be not afraid. It just sounds epic. you know, I want this to continue. I want people like Matthew to be absolved of worrying about being thrown in jail or something like that, because he truly is acting in all of our best interests.
Yeah, and Joni Farash will finish off, said, from the little I know about what is an immaculate constellation, I'm more struck by the normalness and pleasantness of this man. He wasn't what I was expecting at all. He looked very vulnerable, and I felt sorry that his life has been upended this way by delving in the wrong place. And I think that general consensus from most folks, Dan, I could see, was that, similar to what you've said, to what I've said, he came across as vulnerable, nervous, a little worried. At times in the interview, he does relax and he smiles, but he's almost like reluctant and hesitant, and he tries to keep himself composed. And again, to what Dan said at the beginning, please go and watch Jeremy and George's interview. It's 46 minutes long. They get right into it. It's fascinating. And you get to see that body language, which I think is really important in this one as well. So part two is out on Tuesday, I believe. And we look forward to that. It kind of leaves it on a tease, Dan, doesn't it, around Sean Kirkpatrick's involvement, that idea of government within a government and the control that they have, that the actual government and people in power don't have the power. It looks pretty interesting, pretty damning, and look forward to kind of seeing that coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he says that there's a transcript that shows Sean Kirkpatrick talking to Marco Rubio about the legacy program. He was knowledgeable. Kirkpatrick was knowledgeable about deception of our government. And apparently in this transcript, Rubio can be seen asking, what the hell is the executive branch doing? Have they been running this for 60 years without oversight? So it seems like Kirkpatrick led Marco Rubio to the legacy program, and then Kirkpatrick is telling us that there's nothing to it. So this could be really big in terms of, you know, media control and communication, and the Pentagon might be a lot more annoyed about this next part than this first part.
Yeah, absolutely. Caught myself on mute there. But Dan, we'll leave it there because you're a man in demand and you've got things to do. So thank you very much for your time. Jump on next week, maybe after part two.
Yeah, sounds great. Let's see when it drops, and we'll watch it, and yeah, we'll do this again.
I think in the meantime, the Hal Putoff interview is out on Joe Rogan. We'll catch that, I'm sure. At least all the clips will be put up online, folks. I recommend people go and check that one out. Hal's an interesting guy. We've got the UAP Disclosure Fund panel that'll be finishing or finished around about now as well. So lots going on over the literally now in the UFO topic, and more fallout from the Matthew Brown situation to dive into. So if you've not checked out yet, and it's not even released yet, but it will be by the time you hear this, on the premium version of the podcast, you can check out Whitley Strieber's interview with me. That'll be good. And it was good, sorry, I think so. And Peter Staffish next week from Sol Foundation as well will be out, and hopefully get Dan back on to look through part two of the Matthew Brown interview. So cheers, Dan. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you for having me. And thank you, as always, to everyone who supports and send in the questions.
Yeah, send in the questions, because we can tack those on to part two. So, because even if it's not as interesting, we can make some content out of it. But yeah, I'm sure it will be. It looks good. So thank you very much, folks, for listening. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rain. Meditative game of state full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I coughed up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should see therapy. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think they'd be, then it's you and me and us and we and him and her and that and she and that thing over there and what's that, Jake? But for being serious, open your mind, consider your heart, consider time, consider your space, consider your lies, consider your life, consider your eyes.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games. Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.